I mean, you work all your life to build up a practice. You want to make sure that you're addressing exposure needs.
We're back with more Future Proof. Really glad you could join us this week. I'm Bill Sheridan. 24 hours a day, in fact. I'm Bill Sheridan. I'm your host. Happy to be here, as always. We got a good show for you again this week, and we're going to get to it here in just a second. First, a reminder that this week's show made possible by our preferred providers, and we actually like to think of these folks as partners, right? These are the organizations, the relationships, the partnerships, really, that allow us, the MACPA, to do a lot of the great stuff that we do for our profession, including this podcast. But these partners, they do way more than that too. They're doing things that we believe can help y'all become more future ready and thrive in this ever-changing world. And help really is the key word here. They truly, truly do want to help. So please reach out to them, find out more about what they can do to help you because they can. Right. And we you'll find out more about all of our preferred providers on our website. That's at macpa.org/showcase. So this week's show, we're going back to the cybersecurity well this week. We've talked about it before, and it's time to talk about it again, and with good reason. The issue is just that important, right? This should give you an idea of just how important it is. The number of cyber attacks jumped by 50% from 2020 to 2021. Then they increased another 38% on top of that in 2022. So just keeps going up, right? And not by a little bit either. And this year, total cost of cybercrime is expected to surpass $8 trillion. That's trillion with a T. And as a result, Gartner predicts that global spending on security and risk management is going to grow by 11% this year. We're going to spend about $188 billion on security and risk management this year. And 2023, it's already off to a roaring start, right? This is from Reuters. They write, quote, thousands of computer servers around the world have been targeted by a ransom hacking attack. That's according to Italy's National Cybersecurity Agency. They're warning organizations to take action to protect their systems. The attack sought to exploit a software vulnerability. And the ACN's Director General, Roberto Baldoni, he told Reuters that it's an attack that's on a massive scale, his words. And the United States paying very close attention to this attack. Reuters is reporting that U.S. cybersecurity officials were assessing the impact of the reported incidents. The U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, said it's working with public and private sector partners to assess the impacts of these reported incidents and provide assistance where needed. And they added that any organization that's experiencing a cybersecurity incident should report it to the FBI or CISA immediately. You know, and this is the type of attack that most of us are worried about, right? Nefarious kind of ne'er-do-wells on the outside breaking into our systems and causing all kinds of chaos. But there's another type of attack that we should be equally concerned about, and that's our own employees, right? Well-meaning, but sometimes clueless folks from the inside, unintentionally kind of leaving us exposed to attack by not following proper security protocols. Accounting Today reported recently on a survey conducted by Eisner Amper. And here's what that survey found. Accounting Today writes, quote, companies remain most concerned about external hackers causing cybersecurity breaches, with 75% saying the next attack will likely come from the outside. However, almost as many, 71%, are concerned about their own workers who aren't necessarily malicious in the same way, but whose mistakes could imperil the firm nonetheless. Far fewer believe an employee would deliberately do anything to harm their systems. Just 23% believe that. When a breach does happen, writes Accounting Today, many are not confident that their firms will be prepared. The survey found somewhat muted faith in current safety measures, with 51% saying they are only somewhat prepared, while 39% feel very prepared. 6% said they are not prepared at all. in their overall cyber defense strategies. 4% are unsure. And then when asked about internal cyber defense, 57% are somewhat confident, 37% very confident, and still 6% are not confident at all. This lack of confidence, says the report, underscores the lack of training and education around cybersecurity matters. Only 50% said they are conducting cybersecurity training on a regular basis. A total of 44% held a training within the prior 6 months, while 25% held training more than 7 months ago. And really, an alarming 31% said they had never held a single training event, end quote. So, clearly, with all of the attacks going on around us and more expected this year, there's still a lot of work to do here, folks, in terms of making our organizations safer. And that's why I'm so happy to welcome my guest this week. He is Stan Sterna. Stan is vice president for Aon, which is the broker and national administrator for the AICPA member insurance programs. Stan has specialized in the defense of professionals for over 30 years. And since 1998, he has been exclusively dedicated to defending accountants and the accounting profession. So he speaks your language, folks. He serves as a claims coverage and risk management consultant. So I wanted to talk to him a little bit about what he's seeing out there in the cybersecurity world. We talked about what businesses should be doing to protect themselves in this environment, just as important, what individual employees should be doing to kind of protect themselves and the companies they work for. So really big issue here, and one that obviously isn't going away anytime soon. Glad you're here to hear this one. Here is my conversation with Stan Sterna. Stan, thanks so much for being here. Appreciate your time. We all hear so much about cybersecurity these days, and you know, I think we're all pretty much aware that this is a big deal, but I'm looking for an idea of how big of a deal is this. I mean, kind of set the stage for us, if you could.
Sure, Bill. Well, accountants are, in my opinion, a prime target for cyber attacks for a couple of reasons. One is they're aggregators of data. Not only financial data, but in this day and age where they're providing consulting on a myriad of different issues, they're gathering personal information as well on clients. So that makes them an attractive target. The other thing is that a lot of accountants handle clients' money. There are a lot of accounting firms that are engaged to pay expenses for clients and handle cash deposits. That makes them even more of an attractive target to cyber criminals because there's access to potential liquidated funds that could be liquidated or liquid funds, excuse me. And I think the third reason is most cyber criminals aren't focusing in on large national nationally sponsored attacks, like, you know, as we heard with Colonial Pipeline and all these other major political, geopolitical cyber attacks. Right. They're criminals and they're opportunistic criminals. Mm-hmm. And like any criminal, they're going to focus in on what they perceive as weak links. And just like the old adage of the burglar going through the neighborhood and jiggling doorknobs to see which one is open, right. They're going to kind of probe and see, you know, who has lax cybersecurity controls in place so they can access the system. And there's the perception, right or wrong, that accounting firms, especially some of the smaller firms or mid-sized firms, just don't have the data security framework in place in order to avoid these type of attacks and don't have response plans in place so that if, let's say, a cyber criminal orchestrates a ransomware attack, that they'll be able to have access to be able to get online without much of a business interruption. So they know that they have these firms sort of in the crosshairs as well. So I think those would be the three reasons why I think it's a pretty major concern for the accounting profession at this time.
What kinds of attacks should CPAs in particular be watchful for? Like, what do you think are at the top of the list for them?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think there's, to me, there's two that are at the top of my list, and that's one, ransomware. For several reasons. You know, one thing is, like I said, there's some smaller targets that just don't have a response plan in place. I think cyber criminals know this, so that if they go back, that's my
No worries.
It's my Ring doorknob. Let me turn it down.
And we can actually, I'll just start by asking that question again. And
okay.
Then kind of edit
apologize
that.
For that.
No worries at all. So what kinds of attacks should CPAs in particular be watchful for? Stan, what's kind of at the top of the list for them?
Yeah, I think there's two, Bill, and that's, one is ransomware for the reasons I stated. You know, the perception that firms, especially the smaller and the mid-sized firms, lack a response plan in place that they can get back online. So they understand that if they infiltrate the system and have a ransomware attack that shuts down the network, that they are going to really, really put that firm in a bind from not only an ongoing business standpoint, servicing clients, but also reputational as well. Ransomware is also being sold as a service on the dark web. You don't have to be a sophisticated cyber criminal in order to access the tools to be able to infiltrate a ransomware attack. These are being offered and sold on the dark web. And as crazy as it sounds, there's even helplines and help desk hotlines that these cyber criminals can call and get instructions on how to properly orchestrate an attack. So
that's crazy.
And ransomware is, and for that reason, ransomware has exploded. I mean, if anybody is somewhat familiar with the cyber insurance market, there's been a lot of carriers that have opted to get out of the market or change their product offerings in cyber, and have certainly almost all cyber insurance companies have strengthened their underwriting due diligence to basically focus in on what firms are doing in order to protect themselves from ransomware. So it's that compelling of a risk that it's impacting the cyber insurance market as well. And then the other thing is social engineering. And, you know, as I mentioned, accountants have access to client funds. Cyber criminals know this. And so they'll orchestrate social engineering schemes where they'll maybe send a fake email will be purported to be from a client. They'll, pretend to be a client by using a fake email address, or they might even infiltrate a client's email as well, and then make an urgent request for transfer of money. And unless you're doing things to verify that that's an actual request, we've had several firms that I know of that have been victims of social engineering and have improperly transferred money, clients' money, to an account of a cyber criminal, an untraceable account. So those are, I think, the two big areas of concern that I would have.
And these can be pretty costly, especially for smaller organizations, right? I mean, what kind of ransomware in particular, I keep hearing crazy numbers being tossed around. I mean, what kind of numbers are you seeing in terms of what this might cost an organization?
Well, I mean, there's certainly been an increase in payments and cyber claims just over the past year or two. And, you know, I think I couldn't really give you an average, but I've been doing this for a long time, and I've seen the increase in costs. And I, you know, 10 years ago, the cost was nil. The typical cyber claim against an accounting firm was my laptop was stolen. Mm-hmm. And so they would report it to the cyber carrier, And 9 times out of 10, it was stolen so that the criminal can make access or take use of and sell hardware, the actual laptop. They didn't care about the data. Now it's different. There's actually, they're using that data. Their data in and of itself is a commodity. And ransomware, we've seen a significant increase in the claims, where claims, again, ransomware was nil. They would be asking for a relatively modest ransom. And now they understand, I think, to a certain degree that, again, they kind of have you in the crosshairs. You're going to be offline. You're not going to be able to service your clients. There's going to be damage to your reputation. And they know that many firms will, pay 5 figures, maybe even up to 6 figures in order to get the unlock their computer, their network. And they also understand cyber criminals that a lot of these firms are insured. And I think that has a certain bearing on the amount that they're going to ask for. The problem with that if you're a cyber criminal is when someone's insured, it's not just the money that's available, but there's a whole wealth of other resources available, such as forensic assistance, of legal assistance, things of that nature that are really meant to mitigate the cost. So, I think it's somewhat of a self-defeating prophecy by the cyber criminals thinking that they're going to get more money because people are insured. But it certainly, I think, has driven up the cost to where we're talking, years ago, a ransomware, $3,000, maybe $1,000 now. We're talking, 5 figures up to hundreds of thousands of dollars. So.
And it gets, you think you're doing the right thing by paying to get access to the data back, but I'm sure that there are criminals out there who think, hey, they paid once, maybe they'll do it again, So.
Without a doubt. I mean, these are criminals. They don't actually have the best, best reputation for being honest and sincere. So yes, they'll come back. You're an easy mark. You paid. They might accept a ransom and unlock your computer and unlock your network. So you're not offline anymore, but then nickel and dime you down the road saying, well, by the way, when we did have access to your system, we have all this information, available as well. And, we're going to sell this information to the highest bidder unless you pay us another ransom. Mm-hmm. So, these people are very apt at developing either more, increasingly more nefarious schemes in order to extricate money from people. So
what should organizations be doing to kind of protect themselves and their clients as well?
Yeah. Well, I mean, number one is you have to have some sort of response system in place so that when you're having when you have a situation, there is a go-to response plan in order to resolve, get back on, whether that's having servers offline, having preventative measures as well, such as making sure you're installing patches within 30 days of release and you're not just waiting on them. Maybe tagging external emails to alert employees that a message may have originated from outside the organization. I just had an internal email that was, basically to test our knowledge internally at my company. And the first thing I looked for is, okay, it was a question asking about something about benefits, if I remember correctly. And right away, I noticed it was outside the organization. It just did not appear right. And I reported it. There's software that you can get that can be implemented to protect against phishing messages. So the type of message where somebody says, hey, we're doing a survey. It's from maybe a company or an entity that you've worked with. Or even an internal survey, click on this link, and they're phishing to get somebody to bite. And there's software that will flag those. You can have web filtering to block access to what is known malicious websites. You know, multi-factor authentication for access to the system, and, you know, meaning not just entering a password, but also, you know, entering, you know, other information as well. You know, whether that's entering a password that will trigger a message to your, let's say, work for cell phone saying, did you log into the system, and yes or no, and, you know, things of that nature. There's even biometric authentication. You know, I have a I have to put a password in, I have to answer a question, have I logged in on my cell phone, and then I have to put an imprint of my thumb, so my fingerprint, to get in. So you know, that's very important. I think you know, making sure end-of-life operating systems or platforms, and this includes, you know, systems that use an extended service contract with a manufacturer, that make sure that those, you're not utilizing systems that are no longer in normal use, or not used, or have kind of been outdated, because they're just not going to have, they're not going to be patched regularly, they're not going to have the protections that obviously, you know, new systems will. And, you know, training and testing is important. I think, to be honest with you, Bill, you know, that's one of the more critical areas that you can do. I mean, along with all these other things I mentioned. And the reason being is you're only as safe as your weakest point. Mm-hmm. And if your employees don't understand you know, what to look out for, and, you know, what the exposure is and how it can impact the firm from a financial standpoint, as well as a reputational standpoint, you're at extreme disadvantage. You can put everything you want in there, but if people aren't utilizing any of the things that you put in place, it's going to be a big detriment to the firm. You know, storing backups offsite, physically is another important tool to ward off a data security risk. And, you know, last but not least is, you know, you should have cyber insurance. And, you know, cyber insurance, like I said, is not going to just provide you with an opportunity to pay a claim or legal expenses in defending a claim, but, like, they're going to engage forensic experts to help you locate the risk, neutralize it. You know, how expansive is it? There's going to be legal assistance that's going to help you, not only in terms of possibly negotiating with ransomware individuals, but also notifying all the necessary parties that need to be notified. All 50 states have breach notification statutes that you have to comply with. And if you're not complying with those statutes, you know, there's a lot of regulatory issues that can come about. So it's important to get legal assistance as well, and cyber insurance will provide that. Also suggest considering getting crime insurance. And crime insurance, because cyber policies are being written in a way that are, you know, addressing the cyber risk, but they may not be addressing the risk of improper transfer of property, of what would be covered property under a crime policy. And the best example is when you're transferring client funds improperly. And when you do that, there are certain policies of insurance out there that, you know, aren't going to cover the transfer of property. They'll cover the data security breach, but they're not going to cover a funds transfer. So having a policy in place that will, whether it's a crime policy or endorsement to your cyber policy, something that will impact, you know, that potential exposure and be able to mitigate it is certainly important.
You find it more and more folks in the profession kind of gravitating toward that type of insurance. I mean, how aware, I guess, are folks in the profession that that this is an option that they should be paying close attention to?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think they're obviously becoming more aware, just because, you know, you cannot turn on the news without or read, you know, your smartphone and the news on the smartphone and not realize that you know, data security breaches and the risk of it are of great importance to every industry, including the accounting profession. Additionally, you have a lot of clients that you're working with, whether it's clients or prospects that are demanding, either maybe in engagement letters or RFPs, demanding that the firm have something beyond just the professional. You have a professional, there's a professional standard of confidentiality. And, you know, I have many firms that I talk to where, you know, a client will be asking for more. You know, I want an insurance clause in the engagement letter that says that you're going to maintain cyber insurance and you're going to, you know, provide, assurance that if there is a data breach, whether it's in your system or even a third-party provider, that there's some sort of recourse for that in some way, shape, or form. So you can't avoid it in dealing with your clients. I think it's just, anybody that's operating a business where, you know, they want to make sure they want to maintain their professional integrity. I mean, you work all your life to build up a practice. You want to make sure that you're addressing exposure needs. And the best way to do that, in my opinion, is not only to do all the things I mentioned, but to be able to transfer the risk to an insurance vehicle. So I think firms, for the most part, are aware, and we're certainly, you know, advising them of the importance of it. I think where there might be a little bit of confusion is that the cyber market is evolving, and it's evolving because the cyber risk is constantly evolving. Mm-hmm. So with that, the products are changing on a very rapid pace. And, as I said, carriers are coming in and out of the market. They're changing their product or limiting their product. Some of them are expanding the products. So there's somewhat of a gray area going on because of the evolving exposure and the evolving risk transfer vehicles that are being implemented. So,
yeah, makes life a little complex for you too.
Yes, it does.
Just circling back real quick, a couple of minutes ago, you mentioned kind of weak points or weak links in an organization's ability to protect themselves. I'm curious what you think the impact of recent trends like remote work might play in all of this.
Sure. I mean, remote work, does have some impact on cyber. Obviously when remote work kind of really came into vogue during the pandemic, the accounting firms were very apt at adapting to a remote work environment. And, I think, when I talk to a lot of firms, a lot of them say it was to their advantage for a lot of different reasons. You know, the problem with remote work is, I guess, twofold. I mean, one, you have the obvious problem of people using their own personal devices to transfer information, and those personal devices may not be protected like your own network systems are. Another area would be, working in a public Wi-Fi and not using VPN, and where people can, hackers can have access that way. I think another important thing of remote work is, remote work, and this was kind of going on before the pandemic has allowed the accounting profession to expand in a way beyond just a traditional accounting services that they provide. And really what I'm talking about is the client accounting services and the use of a portal. And, now you don't necessarily have to be on site to be a bookkeeper or the accountant in charge of a company's business. You can have a secured portal from a third-party provider, and you can have your client have all that information in the cloud and be able to access that information without having to physically be at the client's office. And that's great for the profession and expanding everything that CPAs can provide clients. It's great for the clients because, not everybody wants the accountant coming in every day or every other day or whatever it is. And it's a much easier process. So that's helped the profession grow. Conversely, that is a direct result of, I think, the ability to work remotely and the platforms available. Conversely, The problem with that is, you know, what happens if there's a breach in the portal of it provided by a third party vendor, secure or otherwise? You know, what happens if there's a breach? The client, regardless of whether you told the client, and I recommend in all engagement letters, you advise the client, you know, we're going to use a third party provider and we're going to do everything I can to maintain your confidentiality, but you know, they're going to work, you know, again, you know, it may be an issue with them, just so you're aware of it. Regardless, if you do that, the client is going to look to you if there's a breach. Mm-hmm. You're their CPA. It's not the third-party vendor. They did not engage the third-party vendor. So the argument is always going to be, it's on your watch, number one. Number two, you engaged the third-party vendor. I didn't. So what due diligence did you do with that third-party vendor? So what were you doing to make sure that, you know, they had proper security plans in place, that they had their own insurance if there was a breach in their system to cover a loss like I'm experiencing the clients? You know, what are you doing to monitor their performance and audit the work that they're doing? And not only do that, but monitor the work that they're doing to maintain security. So, you know, one thing I always recommend is that obviously, you know, do your due diligence on any third party provider. You know, I believe that the there is look for the actual site. It might be the NIST. So the National Institute of Standards and Technologies. That's a great resource for how to formulate a due diligence assessment plan of a third party vendor. I recommend you perform periodic checks on the performance of the third party vendor in managing and securing data, the data you're providing the client or otherwise. And then I think this is key. When entering into a service agreement with a third-party vendor, you should spell out the vendor's responsibilities in the event of a data breach on their watch because of breach of their system. Their responsibilities with regard to neutralizing the threat, and most importantly, that they're agreeing to defend and indemnify any third party, you and any third party, for any claims that are made by clients or other third parties as a result of a breach on their watch. A lot of firms in the past have not done that. They've, you know, this is not a check the box kind of, I agree to the service agreement type of situation. In my opinion, those days are over. Mm-hmm. Third party vendors know that in order to do work in this space with a sophisticated clientele, like accounting firms who are dealing a lot with sophisticated clients, that there's going to have to be safeguards in place for a lot of reasons. One, it's demanded by the market. And two, it's demanded by all the regulatory structure out there. And when I talk about the regulatory structure, I really mean all these state breach notification laws. Mm-hmm. And there's a risk. And that from my standpoint, when I'm advising firms, you know, you're on the hook if you get a third party and that third party is not up to snuff in terms of maintaining security. That's true, you know, but you should do everything in your power to transfer that risk to the third party, because especially if it's a third party, it's going to be housing the data and it's a breach in their system. So, you know, make sure that you're managing that risk in such a way so that, you know, you'll still be sued, unfortunately, but you'll have another culpable party that you'll be able to maybe trigger an indemnification clause, you know, something of that nature in order to transfer the risk and the exposure.
Yeah. Boy, a lot to take in and consider there. Where can folks get more information, other areas of, you know, that might have resources that would be helpful, you know, things that you and the folks at Aon are doing? Where should people turn?
Yeah, I would. I would turn to, well, first the Department of Commerce, National Institute of Standards and Technology. That is a great resource, not just for due diligence assessments, but just you know, for how to plan a response strategy, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Another great resource, if you give me 1 second,
sure,
I will look it up. have a look for it here. Bear with me, Bill, for once.
Yeah, no worries. And we can cut the
pause out there. Okay, so another great resource is ncsl.org. And ncsl.org is a website that's maintained by the National Conference of State Legislatures. And it's a bipartisan nonprofit organization that monitors, tracks, and researches state legislation. So you can use that to find a current listing, an up-to-date current listing of breach statutes for all 50 states. Wow. And I think that's another great resource. Because, you know, a lot of these, we have no national cybersecurity standards. Mm-hmm. There is a patchwork of state notification laws. All 50 states have them. Some are more onerous than others. I think, you know, especially for firms that maybe have clients in other states or even in the state that they work in, knowing what the statutes require will kind of at least, you'll have an understanding of what's expected of you. You know, you're always, if something happens, you can, you know, enlist the services of an attorney through your insurance company to help you. But knowing what you need to do to maintain or to respond to a breach is important. You know, there are also a handful of states that have privacy laws, so consumer privacy laws. So you'll be able to find access, or you'll be able to access information on those as well. I know, you know, California, Virginia, and Colorado, for example, are states that have consumer laws. And there's a lot of states, not sure about Maryland, but there's a lot of states that are contemplating similar laws. Again, because the market is dictating it. And then I would also consult with your cyber carrier. So if you have a cyber carrier, many of them have excellent risk management resources that will provide, you know, breach notification summaries, opinions from industry experts, educational materials, and other risk management tools, including incident response planning guidance and workshops. You know, I do a lot of work for the AICPA insurance program. There's a risk resource called eRisk Hub in the resource section that will provide information to members who are part of the insurance program as well on these issues.
Well, good stuff there. Stan, thanks so much for your time, for your insights. Really, really helpful. I really appreciate you being here. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate the time and the opportunity.
Great conversation there about a really important topic with my guest this week, Stan Sterna. Stan is vice president for Aon, which is the broker and national administrator for the AICPA member insurance programs. He's specialized in the defense of professionals for over 30 years, including accounting and the accounting profession. And you can find out some tips, some resources, lots of great information about all of this to help you deal with a cyber incident on Aon's website. You can get there at bit.ly/AonProtect. That's bit.ly/AonProtect. bit.ly/AonProtect, that website. Lots of great stuff there again. So be sure to check that out. And don't forget this week's show, made possible by our preferred providers, our partners in this profession. They're doing some really cool stuff, folks. Some things that we believe can help you become more future ready and thrive in kind of the crazy environment that we're in. You'll find out more about all of our preferred providers on our website. That's macpa.org/showcase. And that's it, gang. Thanks for being here. Glad you were here. Have a great week. We'll talk to you again soon.